Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host. Each week, I provide training to product managers through this podcast. I also provide training that helps product managers become product masters. Check out how to become a product master using my free product mastery roadmap at the same place where you'll find the show notes for this episode. And that is theeverydayinnovator.com/093. According to my guests, marketing at its heart is starting a conversation with someone who could be an ideal customer. Now, of course, then my first question is, how do we find the ideal customer for a product or service? Thankfully, my guest, Tom Schwab, had some ideas. Tom is the founder of Interview Valet, and his previous background is in medical device products. In this interview, you'll learn why marketing should start with the customer, how to identify the ideal customer, and what we can learn from the ideal customer for a product. Now to the discussion. Tom, thank you so much for joining the Everyday Innovators and being on the podcast.
Chad, I am thrilled to be here.
It was fun how we got connected. I know you were following my podcast for a while. And then a mutual friend actually reached out a few weeks ago and said, I know a great guest for you, Chad. You know, you got to go and talk to this guy. He's in a mastermind group with me. And went, oh, I think we're already connected. And so I got to find out a little bit more about you, and glad you can share some of your experience with customers and innovation.
Well, I think today is so amazing. You know, when people talk about 6 degrees of separation, that sounds like so Y2K right now. I think today it's more like 1 or 2. So I'm thrilled to be here. And when Jerry mentioned you, I'm like, I love that podcast.
Well, thanks so much. It's been a good thing for me to do, and somewhat of a labor of love, and just enjoyed getting to talk to guests like you. And I learn through everyone I do, which is the best thing about it. So you have this interesting career that started out as a nuclear officer in the U.S. Navy, and then moving into some leadership roles in medical device companies. And it looked like, as I was just looking over your bio, that you kind of have this arch that emphasized marketing more and more as time went on. And I was just curious about that and how you think about marketing.
Sure. And to me, my career only makes sense looking backwards. Mm-hmm. It was not the one that I picked out when I graduated from the Naval Academy. And to all the U.S. taxpayers out there, thank you for paying for my education. I look at it as building upon itself. So as I look at marketing, marketing at its heart is starting a conversation with somebody that could be an ideal customer. Not everybody, but just that one person. And we were talking before that I think however you started your career or your training, sometimes that gives you the goggles or the vision of how you look at life from there on. Mm-hmm. So I've always looked at things as, you know, problems to be solved from an engineering perspective, systems to be tuned up and to get the most performance out of that. So with marketing and business in general, I've always looked at it as like, okay, let's start with version 1.0. How can we get this better? How can we refine it? And I'm excited to talk about that because I always say that you and I always have opinions, but it's only the customer that's the expert, and they're the ones that are sort of telling us what they love and what they loathe. And in the Navy, we used to talk about it that you got to be smart enough to know right answer when told. And I think the same thing goes in business too. If you're in product development, marketing, anything like that, you got to be smart enough to know it, and the customer will tell you the right answer.
Yeah, I suspect you've ran into this. Like you, I've had the pleasure of working with, you know, really big companies and entrepreneurs, right? Solopreneurs. And startups and things in between. And occasionally run into the entrepreneur that has a great idea. You know, they've identified a customer market and like, but they're a little, you know, arrogant about what they think is the right solution. And they're imposing their solution on what the customer needs, as opposed to really, they've heard the customer solution and they're basically ignoring it, right? And I don't think in marketing and product management, we can afford that kind of arrogance.
Well, and not only that, as I would say, sometimes they bully to get the answer they want. Mm. You know, if you sell something hard enough, people will tell you what you want to hear. You know, my mother loves everything I do, and I don't have to really bend her arm too much on that. But, you know, if you have people that tell you yes all the time, it's really easy to think this is a great idea, this is a great plan. But the experts always vote with their dollars. So people can tell you, oh, I love this, this is great. But if it comes out and they don't vote with their dollars, they're telling you something. And right. Sometimes those dollars are their time, their attention. You know, we talk about, you know, if they're on a web page and they bounce right off of it, well, they're telling you something. They don't want to invest their time on that. So you may see it as the most beautiful, compelling thing ever, but they just voted on it and they told you it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we need to pay attention and listen to that. Share a little bit with us just what you're doing now, because I know you've made this transition from the corporate world and leading organizations and helping with marketing there to more of an entrepreneur activity these days.
Right. And, you know, I've really enjoyed that from the standpoint of as an engineer, I always considered myself very creative. I didn't want to just solve the problem that was given. I wanted to come up with a new problem that we could solve. And I love that from the entrepreneurial side. And one of the things we saw was that the rules of business have changed. And the internet has been a great equalizer. You know, it used to be that people were sold things. And nobody ever likes to be sold anything, but we all like buying things. And we like to buy things that solve our problems or our needs. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you know, the old way of doing marketing used to be that I've got something to sell to you. So, Chad, I've got something to sell to you, and I'm going to put up a big, ugly billboard right on your drive to work. I'm going to interrupt your favorite television show, Super Bowl, whatever it is, and it's all, I've got something to sell to you.
Right.
And really, the world has changed, and the guys that brought this to my attention are two guys out of MIT that wrote a book called Inbound Marketing, Dharmesh Saw and Brian Halligan. Hmm. And they talked about that people aren't using the internet to be sold to. They're trying to find answers to the problems. And those people that provide them the answers, they get the know, like, and trust. They get the sale. They get the lifetime value. And, you know, some people are out there trying to sell a transaction, but the ones that are really winning are the ones that are trying to build a relationship. Mm-hmm. So I built some companies with this called inbound marketing or permission marketing. And one of the things that we saw is that content is the fuel that drives the business. Right. So these answers, these helpful things, and these used to be blogs, but really blogs aren't nearly as popular as they used to be. Mm-hmm. And so what we saw is that content can be anything. It can be videos. It can be social media posts. It can be podcasts. And what we saw is that podcasts were really engaging with people. They either liked them or they didn't. They would spend a lot of time listening to it. And what a great way to talk to your ideal customer and really get that feedback. So we really focused more on how can we optimize that? How can we use that? And we've been doing that for over the last 3 years, over 300 different clients, 3,000 interviews. And now we've really focused on a done-for-you service so that we work with the key individuals to go out there and help them identify their ideal customers mm-hmm. in order to get in front of them, to speak to them, and really turn listeners into leads. And okay. I always look at it and say, it's an offshoot of the engineering that I learned, you know, of how to solve a problem, how to come up with a process with it, and how to make it reproducible so that it's not just black magic, but that it works for everybody.
I'm in the same boat, originally trained as an engineer, worked as an engineer for a while. And, you know, my only connection now pretty much with engineering is I get to solve problems still. And I kind of wanted that context from you because I do want to go down the road of focusing on customer-driven innovation and talk about that ideal customer. But you have this mix of, you know, being the solopreneur, entrepreneur, and the larger company kind of perspective. And a lot of the everyday innovators that are listening, you know, most of them are in a established company, you know, working in product management type roles, whatever their title happens to be, or innovation. But they may very well have their side project, their side interest, the thing that they work on at night that, you know, is something that they might want to turn into a business sometime. So I think all this fits. I know on my personal journey, you know, my training company helps product managers become product masters, getting this training company going kind of off the grounds. I've been myself going down a road of learning more about online marketing and content marketing, you know, and all these buzz terms, it seems like. And I have been surprised over and over how often that knowledge translates back to the large organization and that the things that we talk about as doing as entrepreneurs really should apply to the marketing efforts in the larger companies that would just clarify their messaging, right? So I think all the things we're going to talk about will fit really well for listeners.
And I would say even further than that, that all of the listeners, that everything that we say here should be more common sense. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we really focus on these buzz terms, right, of inbound marketing, content marketing, all the rest of this. Well, at its heart, you know, marketing is starting that conversation. And I think if you think from the strategy standpoint, I think our grandparents and great grandparents are probably more, or would have been more ready for the future here than we are or our kids are, because it's not about that next tool or tactic, mm-hmm, because those are going to come and go. If you understand the strategy of what you're trying to do, then you can always use that next tool or next tactic to get better. But if you don't understand what you're trying to do, that tool is just going to amplify your brilliance or your ignorance.
Right. I'm going to borrow this from you. I like how you phrase marketing as the, you know, conversation with the ideal customer. And there's kind of two perspectives, right? And you alluded to this one before, that there's kind of the push perspective where we're going to make a product and push it on people. And there's more of the pull perspective, which is we're going to get to know customers and their problems and listen to them. And you sound like you're clearly, at least for our conversations so far, you've been in that camp of, you know, let's understand what the customer needs and what kind of problems they have and what we can solve for them.
Very much so. And it's a question of, you know, people say it's the same thing. But are you trying to sell something to someone, or are you trying to help them buy something?
Yeah.
Are you trying to sell something that solves your problem, or are you trying to help them buy something that solves their problem?
Right. And too many times, unfortunately, people will contact me with what they're working on is, you know, their side project maybe, or the startup, you know, doing something new, and have a product in place that they're really excited about. And now they're trying to figure out, well, how do I get people to buy it? Well, you know, what did you do in the first place to prove out the concept? You know, who did you talk to? What questions did you ask? What feedback did you get? How did you demonstrate that this was really a valid problem that you're addressing and solving? And a lot of time, none of that work has gotten done, right? It's just pursuing the great idea that maybe, you know, we're not really ready for a product for that.
And sometimes we all fall in love with our products.
We sure do.
And, you know, nobody's own baby is ugly. But I think some of the best wisdom I've ever gotten comes from clients and customers. And one of the weirdest compliments I ever got was from a customer. And he came back and he said, "You guys are just like Preparation H." And I was like, I don't understand that. And he came back and he said, "Well, you relieved my pain. You worked fast. You were recommended by other people." And he said, "The problem I had before that was a pain in the rear end." And it got me to think that, you know, all of us are selling Preparation H. Nobody really wants your product or service. They just want their pain point to go right away. And I think too often we look at it as, you know, do you want to buy my product? Do you want to try my product? Do you want to give me feedback on my product? And really the question we should be asking is, you know, how can I solve your pain? How would this solve your pain? How could this solve your pain better? Because that's what everybody's interested in.
So this approach starts with finding the customer to talk to understand what their problem is. And then for what you're trying to do, it's really the ideal customer, you know, for the product that you are wanting to develop or pursue, and then learning from the customer what really needs to get done. So help us figure out where to start with that. How do we start identifying our ideal customer?
Sure. And really that comes from looking at it and saying, who can be thrilled by this product or service? I think some of the worst things you can do is say this applies to everybody. And sometimes you have the luxury of knowing this person already or knowing the group. Other times it's just putting yourself in that position. If you've got a sales force or customer service people, sometimes they can help you explain who this person is, put a name on them, a face on them, put a story behind it. And sometimes we start with the demographics as far as what's their education level, what's their income level, where do they live. And while that's important, I would say you need to go beyond that and to really what's called the psychographics and how does this person think. And a lot of times you've got to make assumptions on this, but you can make educated assumptions. And the psychographics are really what only their best friend would know about them, or their spouse. So demographics is more what the census data knows. Psychographics are what a best friend knows. And so from that question is like, what are their aspirations? What are their fears? What do they already think about my industry or my product? What are their predispositions to it? Where do they get their information? Who influences them? You know, what do they admire and what do they have contempt for? And so all of those things, if you can start putting that picture together and sometimes even put a picture of that person. You know, one of the companies that that I founded, we had different buyers, and you know, one of them was called Mary the Motivated Mom, and of course, that there was a poster up in the hallway of Mary the Motivated Mom, and we found somebody on, you know, a picture on the internet that said that's what she looks like, and there was the story of what she was trying to do and how we could help her, but there was also another picture in there of somebody that was a negative buyer persona, and those are the people that you don't want to work with. And I think it's not that they're bad people. It's just that you can't serve them.
Right.
So be very sure that you're not trying to do all things for all people. So, for us, it was a customer service issue. We were set up as a internet-based company. And so if somebody, didn't have an email address, if they didn't know how to use a computer, if they wanted to call in or fax in every question, they're probably not going to be a good customer for us. We would frustrate them. And better to spend time thrilling the people that you can than trying to make everybody happy. And so I think sometimes it's not only pointing out these are our ideal customers, but these are customers that won't be served by this. And I think with the internet now, and you know, people talk about that long tail, the riches are more in the niches, that if you can make a product that really focuses on somebody's ideal pain point,
right,
and that resonates with them, you'll get more profits, more engagement out of that. A friend of mine pointed out to me, he said, I'd rather spend $50 for a 50-page book that spoke directly to me and told me everything I needed to do for my industry. He said, I'd spend $50 for a $50 book before I'd spend $10 for a 500-page book that I have to go through and try to find the answer. And I think really that's that niching down into the buyer persona.
Yeah, I think that's good advice for where we start, is with a very clear focus on a individual problem, like I forgot, Mary something mom, right?
Mary the Motivated Mom.
Mary the Motivated Mom, right? And a very specific person. And when I have conversations with people about who is their ideal customer, what is that persona, I love it when they have a name for it, right? And they know where that person lives, and they have they know that person's age and a lot of information about them. But the key there that you talked about was beyond those demographics, really understanding their emotions connected with their problem and with what it means to solve that problem. And if we can tap into that, we can do a better job of providing value. And that helps us as product managers and innovators to connect the benefits that our product might have, whether it be something we can touch or a service we provide, to their actual pain that we're resolving. That's that magical value proposition that we can now communicate more clearly, you know, how we can help them.
And sometimes talking to those people in pain is the best people to talk about.
Right.
For a while, we were listening on Twitter for one of our products, and the word "I hate" or some expletives, so it's I'm not going to say and make your show explicit. But we just listened to that on Twitter. And when that would flag up, and we were amazed how often it did, we'd reach out and just ask them some questions and, you know, explain who we were and say, hey, can we talk to you? And when people have pain, man, they want to share it with you. And they'll tell you what they like about things and what they don't like. And that's a better, more honest focus group than people that you might bring in at random that don't have a vested interest in it. So sometimes social media is a great listening tool.
And that focus on inbound marketing, you know, if we're inside companies and we're putting products out to the marketplace, there's a conversation going on whether we're participating in it or not. So, you know, good for you to actually be looking and listening for that kind of feedback. But a lot of companies aren't yet. And I think it's Product managers are starting to get more into the loop on this, but it's a great wealth of information for product managers to have insights into how people feel about competitors' products, how they feel about their own products, what they like to see different, and a lot of good information there.
I've even talked to somebody the other day that was using Amazon reviews. So they'd go into a product that was similar to theirs, and they would just look through all the reviews. Hmm. And they said, basically, anything that was a negative, that customer is just telling you, hey, here is how you can improve this product. Here's what I don't like about the product. And that's just great, great feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have found that those customers oftentimes are pretty easy to turn into advocates, because they're basically asking for help in the first place. You know, they're the ones that are taking time to say, they don't use these words often, but they're basically sharing, I had high expectations for this. I thought it was going to help me, and you left me really disappointed. And if indeed you can address that and get them back to where they started, they often become really good advocates for you.
And if they've already told you and taken the time to give you negative feedback, that means they care enough.
Right, exactly. There's
something called Net Promoter Score,
yep.
And lots of companies use this, but you just have to look at the people that love you or loathe you. You know, if it's a score from 1 to 10, worry about the 9s and the 10s and the 1s to 3s, because the people in the center there, they really don't care. But the other people, boy, they're passionate about it. And one of the things you find is that a lot of times on that, you don't get people giving you 5s and 6s and 7s on a Net Promoter Score, because they don't care about you enough in order to even give you feedback. So if somebody gives you positive or negative feedback, that means that they really, you know, want to engage and want to want you to help them in some way.
Yeah. And for anyone listening that wants to look up Net Promoter Score, NPS, it's often talked about as the most important question. Would you refer someone to our company or not, to this product or not? Right? How likely are you to refer someone?
And yeah, that's a classic Harvard Business Study, and it was like the only question that was correlated to the growth of a company, the profitability company, and the value of a company. So it's one that you should ask.
And it's a pretty good question. We know that we have this desire to find our ideal customer and start engaging with them and asking questions. And so we start with thinking about who that would be in terms of the product we're trying to offer, the service, the problem that we want to solve, who would have that problem. Any advice or tips on how to actually go about finding them? You know, I have seen other research projects done, and I myself have just sat down with random people in coffee shops, right, that at least demographically fit the customer I'm looking for. Advice for how we can find people to engage?
I would say go to where the discussion already is, right? So the best way to get in a discussion with somebody is to join a discussion that's already ongoing. Mm-hmm. You know, think about it. If you go to a party, if you stand in the corner, yeah, there's a chance somebody could already come up to you and start the discussion, but better to go into one and introduce yourself and see if you can add value to that. So with that, you know, that could be lots of things. It could be forums online. It could be Facebook groups. It could be listening on Twitter for different things and just responding to the discussion that's already going on. And I think you'll get a lot better feedback on that from that standpoint. You can even use it, you know, podcasts can be a great way to do that. Listen to what people are talking about. If there's any, and that's one of the things I love about podcasting, is there's 325,000 podcasts in the U.S. right now, and they are so niche down, and that audience is so intense on that and engaged. So I guarantee there's probably knitting podcasts out there. I've never listened to one and I've never been on one, but the people that are on there, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about their frustrations. They're talking about what they need, and it's a little community right in there. And so that's one of the reasons, like when we work with clients, it's like the ones that say, I can think of an author that came back and said, we said, what's your ideal buyer? You know, who do you want to talk to? And his answer was, anybody that has $20 to buy a book and wants to buy a book. And I'm like, no,
oops.
You know, that's not a market. You're not going to have any discussions there. Once again, you're yelling at people. Much, much better to figure out who you want to talk to, and then where that discussion is going on, yeah. and then tap into that. And now today we've got tools like never before. You know, you can get into to Facebook, LinkedIn, any of those groups, and really just start being in there. And the one thing I would say is just be upfront. You know, if you're there doing research for something or you're there for a company, be honest with them, because I think more people will want to help you than trying to figure out, you know, you could lose credibility very quickly if you present to be something else.
Good advice. These online tools are very helpful for having conversations and finding people. Like I know I go to Quora some of the time mm-hmm. and just see what kinds of questions are being talked about and what the answer's been, and, you know, what are thoughts that fits my audience well and the things I'm involved in well. And LinkedIn groups are real helpful for me in that way too. So let's connect some dots here. When it comes to customer-driven innovation, so we're finding our ideal customer and we're starting to engage them in some exchange of information. What are the things that you really want to find out from them to help you with innovation and solving the problem?
Really, it's the problem, right? So they you want to make sure that you're solving their problem, not the problem that you want to solve it. And sometimes it's just asking them, you know, how would you describe this? What do you like most about this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the marketing side and the process side, sometimes open-ended questions are painful because they're not easy to put in little boxes and charts. But I would encourage you and anybody, ask lots of open-ended questions. Because what we've noticed is that it's like the 80-20 rule. You know, 80% of the people will say the same 20% of the things. Mm-hmm. And those, the words that they're using is the right words you should be using from a copyright or a marketing perspective. Mm-hmm. The problems that they're talking about, those are the ones. And the one thing that I would encourage people to do, and this is my inner engineer coming out, is to write them down or log them down. Because too often, we listen to the things that support what we believe. And so if you talk to 10 people, if you don't write things down at the end and sort of tally them up, you may remember those four people that that reinforced what you believed and sort of discount those other six that didn't.
Right.
So put some metrics to that to take out your own personal bias on that. Mm-hmm. But asking a lot of open-ended questions, and then even when you find common questions or common feedback, put that to other people to validate it. What do you think of this? And use their language too. The best copywriters out there are your own customers. Because they're using the terms other customers will use. The descriptions that they use to describe something is the same thing other people will use, and probably the same search terms that other people will use for your product.
And we use copywriting to position and sell. You know, it's the words we use to position and sell a product, a service. There's so many good points of what you just said. The one is the connection for product managers to that end desired result, which is we're selling the product. And product managers tend to get involved in some part of the whole spectrum, right? So we can kind of think of they come up with the ideas. Some people do that and see that through to product concept. Others are focused on developing the actual product. Others are focused on, once it gets launched to the marketplace, managing, you know, the life cycle. And some people, you know, mix all across the spectrum. As you point out, when we're doing those customer interviews, when we're having those interactions with our ideal customer, we're just getting golden information to help later down the road when it comes time to actually position that product to the market. And we shouldn't lose track of that. And I've made the same mistake where I think about, well, right now I am trying to either have interviews to help me uncover the problem better and understand the problem, or I may be at the next stage where I'm trying to validate my solution to the problem, right, and see if it's on the right track or not. And that's my focus. It's like, okay, I'm on the right track. I know what needs to be done. I have the details, and I know if I do it, people are going to buy it. And we collected all this great information in the process that would really help us with the marketing communication effort later to position the product properly. And we shouldn't forget about that. So I'm really glad you pointed that out, because I think that happens too often that we forget to make that connection.
And sometimes those people that gave you all that great feedback, those are your first customers. Mm-hmm. Those are your first advocates, right? Because you listened to them and gave them what they wanted. In some ways, I look at things like Kickstarter as a great way too. If somebody believes in your product enough to buy it before they even, you know, could get it, that's given you a lot of great feedback. And if I think too many people do a Kickstarter campaign and say, well, I didn't do it right. There was something that wasn't right in it, as opposed to saying, no, that's the feedback that you got from the market on that. Mm-hmm. So, but don't look at that in silos as far as all that information can go throughout the entire life of the product.
And those open-ended questions, you know, the simplest one is why, and just love trying to understand why and understand people's emotional connections to it also, right? So we can get back to what are those real pains and frustrations and what do they really desire, and how, you know, what would mean value to them if they could solve this problem?
And I love that question, why? And not only that, keep asking it.
Yep.
You know, because you'll get better answers the more times you ask it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those kinds of interactions, it is really, really useful to tap into your inner kindergarten kid, right? Just be really curious and just play dumb kind of, right? Just keep asking why and not make assumptions about what you think is going on. If I could only go back to when I was 5 years old, that would be helpful.
I've got a granddaughter, and I think that she is more inquisitive than I am. And at times she's wiser than I am too, because she doesn't come into it with preconceived notions.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Kids can ask some of the most profound questions because they don't have a basis. They think about things differently. So very good. And I really enjoy innovation quotes, and I always ask guests to bring one. What did you bring for a quote, and why did you choose that one?
For me, the innovation quote is one of my favorite ones from Derek Sivers. Derek started CD Baby, which was the precursor to iTunes. And what he said is, what's ordinary to you is amazing to others. Because we all have our own perspective on things. We all know our own little things. And so with that, that always reminds me that, you know, if you want to get more extraordinary ideas, they don't come from within. They come from other people interacting with them. So never forget that what you know isn't the same thing that everybody else knows, and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes we take that for granted that, you know, what we know is just common sense. Everyone must not know that, but it's usually not the case. So, and we learn when we bump into each other, and we learn more from each other that way. Excellent. Well, thanks a little bit about talking about your ideal customer and the importance of that really driving marketing efforts, starting with how do we create products and services to add value to our customers. How can people find out more about the work you do and if they want to follow up with you?
Yeah, Chad, I was thrilled to be here. Enjoyed it so much. If anybody wants to connect with me, I love that. And, you know, that's that quote, what's ordinary to you is amazing to me. So I always love that cross-pollination and being amazed by other people. So if you just go to my website, interviewvalet.com /innovator, I'll put a special page up there with what Chad and I talked about here. It'll have all my contact information, my LinkedIn, my social media, and even a link to my calendar. So please, if you're interested at all, if I can help you in any way, please reach out to me at interviewvalet.com/innovator.
Excellent. And I appreciate you making yourself available to everyone listening. While the things we talked about certainly apply for the established company and the marketing development management and efforts in such companies, anyone that's thinking about doing things on the side, I know that's where your passion is now, and you've been helping lots of solopreneurs and entrepreneurs. And I appreciate you make yourself available to help out my audience if anyone wants to contact you. Tom, thanks for your time today. Pleasure talking.
Thank you, Chad.
Thanks for listening. Please tell other product managers and innovators about this podcast. I've made that easy for you. Just go to the show notes for the summary of this discussion with Tom, and you'll find the links at the top of the page to share this podcast with your friends on social media. Also, from the same page, you can download the Product Mastery Roadmap that shows you how to go from product manager to product master. All that and more is at theeverydayinnovator.com/093. Thanks for checking it out. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.